This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Chronicles. Today, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through 2 Chronicles, chapters 6 through 10.
Verse 12 tells us, "Then Solomon offered burnt offerings to the Lord on the altar of the Lord which he had built before the vestibule, according to the daily rate, offering according to the commandment of Moses for the Sabbaths, the new moons, and the three appointed yearly feasts, the feast of unleavened bread, the feast of weeks, and the feast of tabernacles." There were other Jewish feasts, but these were the three that required all Jewish males to come to Jerusalem. Feast of Trumpets, the feast of Pentecost, the feast of Tabernacles, and Passover, or the feast of unleavened bread. And according to the order of David, his father, he appointed the divisions of the priests for their service, the Levites for their duties to praise and serve before the priests as the duty of each day required, and the gatekeepers by their divisions at each gate. For so David, the man of God, had commanded. Then they did not depart from the command of the king to the priests and the Levites concerning any matter or concerning the treasuries. Now all the work of Solomon was well ordered. He was an organized man, an organized leader, from the day of the foundation of the house of the Lord until it was finished, and so the house of the Lord was completed. Then Solomon went to Ezion-Geber and Eilat on the seacoast in the land of Edom. And Hiram sent him ships by the hand of his servants and servants who knew the sea. Now the Phoenicians were the famous sailors of the ancient world. Hiram was a Phoenician. And with the help of these Phoenician friends, Solomon launched a merchant marine. They docked his fleet in the Gulf of Aqaba, there in the Red Sea at the port of Eilat. Today, Eilat is Eilat. It's an Israeli resort and a European vacation destination. Looks like a pretty place to be right now. That's where Solomon based his fleet. And they went with the servants of Solomon to Ophir. And we don't quite know where Ophir is, the southern translation of Ophir, I guess. That's what Chipper Jones says to his wife when he comes home and had a really bad day, had an Ophir. Anyway, Ophir was somewhere deep, deep in Orient. Could have been India, for that matter. But they went there, and they acquired 450 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. And remember, a talent equaled how many pounds? Anybody? 100 pounds. One talent equaled 100 pounds. That's a lot of gold. Solomon became a very rich man. Chapter 9. Now when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, she came to Jerusalem to test Solomon with hard questions. Having a very great retinue, camels that bore spices, gold in abundance, and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for Solomon that he could not explain to her. It was common in the ancient Orient for wise men to challenge each other to a battle of wits. They would come to test each other's knowledge against each other, sort of a showdown of the sages. Reminds me of the wife who was tempted to match wits with her husband. She declined. She said she didn't think it would be fair to do battle with an unarmed man. This was not the case with Solomon. The queen of Sheba entered into this battle of wits with Solomon, and every question she threw at him, he had an answer. There was nothing so difficult that Solomon could not explain it to her. The queen of Sheba, by the way, Sheba is today the country of Yemen in South Arabia. She traveled 1,200 miles to Jerusalem to just see what she had heard of Solomon, to see his wisdom, to see his wealth. She wanted to witness firsthand this great king and his kingdom. And when the queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his servants, the service of his waiters and their apparel, his cupbearers and their apparel, and his entryway by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. In other words, it all took her breath away. Solomon's glory turns a woman speechless. No small task. The queen had heard of Solomon's greatness, his glorious wisdom and his wealth. Now she sees it with her own eyes, and boy, it was more than even she expected. And she confesses to Solomon in verse 5. Then she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe their words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half of the greatness of your wisdom was not told to me. You exceed the fame of which I heard. Happy are your men, and happy are these servants who stand before you and hear your wisdom." Notice it wasn't just Solomon's wealth that impressed her, but Solomon's prosperity had trickled down to his servants. Even his servants had a smile. She probably thought that to be this rich, you had to be a tyrant. And tyrants get very little respect, certainly no happiness from their servants. She realized that, boy, Solomon was different, or his servants wouldn't have been won over by his wisdom and by his love. Solomon ruled his men with such skill that even his most menial servants were endeared to him and loved him. And notice the Queen of Sheba, she gives God glory for Solomon's greatness. She says, "Blessed be the Lord your God, who delighted in you, setting you on his throne to be king for the Lord your God, because your God has loved Israel to establish them forever. Therefore, he made you king over them to do justice and righteousness." Guys, this is Old Testament evangelism at work. You remember what God said to Moses when Israel came out of Egypt? God says, "I'm going to bless Israel to such a degree that all the world will look and say, look at how they've been blessed. Surely their God must be God." He said, if they disobey me, that's if they obey me. He says, if they disobey me, I'm going to curse Israel to such a degree that all the earth will look at Israel and say, wow, look at how they've been cursed. Look at how God is dealing with them. Surely their God must be God. Either way, God was going to get the glory. Here, though, she sees the blessing that God has put upon Solomon. She sees the wealth, the wisdom, the happiness, the joy in Israel. And she realizes that truly, this is no accident. Truly, the God of Israel must be the one true God. Verse 9, "And she gave the king 120 talents of gold, spices in great abundance, and precious stones. There never were any spices such as those the queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon." You could say that the queen of Sheba spiced up Solomon's life. Perhaps she did so in more ways than one. For tradition has it that she wanted to take a son back to Arabia by Solomon. The old boy cooperated, and the son's name was Menelik. It's interesting, until modern times, the kings of Ethiopia all trace their lineage back to Menelik, the child that was born between Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. Speculation, but possibility. Now, the rest of chapter 9 discusses Solomon's treasures, his throne, and all of his trading. Also, the servants of Hiram and the servants of Solomon who brought gold from Ophir brought algum wood, a very, very hard wood, and precious stones. And the king made walkways of the algum wood for the house of the Lord and for the king's house. Credit Solomon with inventing hardwood floors. Solomon's idea. Also, harps and string instruments for singers. Algum had this sheen to its finish, and so it made for a nice wood for instruments. And there were none such as these seen before in the land of Judah. Now, King Solomon gave to the queen of Sheba all she desired, whatever she asked, perhaps even a son, much more than she had brought to the king. And so she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. Verse 13, "The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was 666 talents of gold, besides what the traveling merchants and traders brought. And all the kings of Arabia and governors of the country brought gold and silver to Solomon. Solomon's annual wages, just the gold that he took in, amounted to 666 talents of gold. Now, imagine an annual salary of $426 million a year. Did you know that in 2007, Walmart took in $351 million? They made $11.2 million in profits, but they took in $351 million. That means that Solomon's base salary was $75 million more than Walmart's revenues. This is a wealthy guy. And of course, notice how many talents of gold he took in annually? 666. I'm sure you recognize that number as the number of the beast mentioned in Revelation chapter 13, verse 18, which brings up the question, could there be a connection? Could there be an association between Solomon and the Antichrist? And the answer is maybe. I think Solomon is an interesting type of Satan's henchman in the last days. Think this through with me. Both start out as good men. Both are loved by the Jews. Both show keen business prowess. They amass great wealth. Both are skilled at political maneuvering and strike peace treaties with the countries around them. Both end up worshiping idols and even bring idolatry home to Israel. It's an intriguing study to note the similarities between King Solomon and the Antichrist of the last days. And of course, the most obvious similarity is this number, 666. It's going to come up one more time. And King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. 600 shekels of hammered gold went into each shield. He also made 300 shields of hammered gold. 300 shekels of gold went into each shield. Gold is a soft metal, really makes for a flimsy shield. These shields were primarily ornamental in nature. The king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon, sort of his summer getaway. Now, moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory, and he overlaid it with pure gold. The throne had six steps with a footstool of gold, which were fastened to the throne. There were armrests on either side of the place of the seat, and two lions stood beside the armrests. 12 lions stood there, one on each side of the six steps. Nothing like this had been made for any other kingdom. And so, catch this, notice what you saw when you looked at Solomon's throne. You saw six lions, you saw six steps, and you saw six lions. Six, six, six. It's interesting. All King Solomon's drinking vessels were gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Not one was silver, for this was accounted as nothing in the days of Solomon. There was so much gold in Solomon's day that silver had very little value. I mean, even his everyday dishes were gold. I mean, silver were like paper cups. For the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the merchant ships came bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and monkeys. Solomon even kept exotic animals around his palace. Here's a picture of Solomon. I mean, when you got that much money, you got to spend it on something. And so he bought all these exotic pets, you know, to come in and probably had a zoo out in the backyard. And so King Solomon surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom which God had put in his heart. Each man brought his present, articles of silver and gold, garments, armor, spices, horses, and mules at a set rate year by year. Solomon had 4,000 stalls for horses and chariots and 12,000 horsemen when he stationed in the chariot cities and with the king at Jerusalem. And so he reigned over the kings from the river to the land of the Philistines as far as the border of Egypt. The king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones. And if you've been to Jerusalem, boy, there's stones and rocks everywhere. And he made cedar trees as abundant as the sycamores, which are in the lowland. And they brought horses to Solomon from Egypt and from all lands. Now the rest of the acts of Solomon, first and last, are they not written in the book of Nathan the prophet, in the prophecy of Ahijah the Shilonite, and in the visions of Iddo the seer concerning Jeroboam the son of Nebat? Other sources for Solomon's story. Now Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel 40 years. By the way, those sources no longer exist. The prophecy of Nathan, the Ahijah, and so forth. Now Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel 40 years. Remember how long Saul reigned? 40 years. Remember how long David reigned? 40 years. Solomon reigned 40 years. Then Solomon rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father, and Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place. Of course, the one glaring omission from Ezra's account here of Solomon's life was his harem of foreign honeys. That was the sin that led him into idolatry. Recall, though, the purpose of the Chronicles. You think, why did Ezra leave out such an important point? Remember, the purpose of the Chronicles was encouragement. Ezra, he's with the Jews. They've already come back to the land. They've already served their 70 years of exile in Babylon. And so he's brought them back to the land. They've already paid the price, the penalty for Solomon's sins. Why go back and regurgitate them? Why bring them up again? Why pour salt in fresh wounds? Chronicles, understand, is reviving hope, not heaping guilt. And I think we need to understand this as we learn to treat each other and learn to interact with each other. Yes, sin has its consequences, but our past doesn't have to cripple our future. And we don't have to keep throwing somebody's failures up in their face. God wants to lead Judah to a fresh start, and he's anointed Ezra to do so. That's the purpose of these books. 1st and 2nd Chronicles. Let us remember that principle when we interact with each other. Well, chapter 10 introduces us to Solomon's son and his successor, Rehoboam, who must have been a Democrat because he wanted to raise taxes. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So it happened when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it, he was in Egypt where he had fled from the presence of King Solomon, that Jeroboam returned from Egypt. Now, everybody has a critic. And Solomon's antagonist was a man named Jeroboam. And the contention between the two men had become so hostile that Solomon had banished his rival to Egypt. When Solomon dies, though, guess who returns to challenge his son? Jeroboam. Verse 3. Then they sent for him and called him, and Jeroboam and all Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore," they say, "lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." Jeroboam is throwing some tea in the harbor. He's appealing to the new king Rehoboam for a little tax relief. So Rehoboam said to them, "Come back to me after 3 days." And the people departed. And as soon as they leave, he begins to seek advice. Understand, this is his inauguration. I mean, the old boy hadn't been king but for a few days, and he's already faced with a major crisis. His leadership is being tested from the outset. Well, then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived, saying, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" And they spoke to him, saying, "If you are kind to these people and please them and speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever." These are wise men. They know that folks like to be loved, not shoved. "Be kind to them, and they will repay you with their loyalty." But he rejected the advice which the elders had given him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him. King Rehoboam is doing what some people call advice shopping. You ever gone advice shopping? In other words, you keep asking different people until you find somebody who agrees with you. That's what Rehoboam's doing. He goes to these young guys and he says to them, "What advice do you give? How should we answer these people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" And then the young men who had grown up with him, and understand, the only thing Rehoboam had known was a life of luxury. He had grown up amidst all this wealth and wisdom and so forth. And his aristocratic buddies, they were just as spoiled as he was. He's asking the wrong group. But they spoke to him saying, "Thus you shall speak to the people who have spoken to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us.' Thus you shall say to them, 'My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist.'" In other words, if you think my dad's tough, you ain't seen nothing yet. I'm going to be tougher. "And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges." My father just beat you with whips, but I'm going to tie little pieces of metal bone and shards of ivory in the midst of the whips, and I'm going to hit you with the scourges. Either this guy's dumb, or he's insecure. He's trying to prove himself. Maybe he was a mama's boy or something. And he just, you know, all of a sudden he wants to be a man all of a sudden. And he mistakenly thinks that he can be a man by turning into a tyrant. What a mistake that is. And so Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day as the king had directed, saying, "Come back to me the third day." Then the king answered them roughly. In other words, he had listened to the young guns. "I'll put the axe in tax." And he answers them roughly, and of course he gives them the spiel. "I'm going to raise your taxes." You know, there are many lessons in this story, but not the least of which is this: be careful where you get your advice. Be careful who you listen to. Listen to the wrong people, and it can be tragic. Verse 15, "So the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was from God, that the Lord might fulfill his word, which he had spoken by the hand of Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Now when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, 'What share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, O David.' So all Israel departed to their tents, but Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelt in the cities of Judah." All of a sudden, a breach occurs. The northern tribes break away from the southern tribe of Judah. A civil war is on the horizon. This time, the rebels are in the north, and they break from Judah. They pull away from Rehoboam. What part do we have with David or with Rehoboam? They rally under the leadership of Jeroboam. Now, King Rehoboam's next move proves how dumb this man really was. Taxation is the issue that has caused the north to revolt. So who does he send to restore the peace? And King Rehoboam sent Hadoram, who was in charge of revenue. He sends out the head of the IRS. How bright is that? What kind of reception is he going to get? But the children of Israel stoned him with stones, and he died. Therefore, King Rehoboam mounted his chariot in haste to flee to Jerusalem. All this time, Rehoboam was still in Shechem. This was still the site of his inauguration. Rehoboam loses half of his kingdom in 3 days after he takes office. And so Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this very day for the next 200 years of Hebrew history. God's people will remain a divided kingdom, the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.